This is the Proco 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs. I'm Dave Tabor, and this episode is with Tyler Holm, CEO of Horizon Organic Dairy. I'm excited about this episode of Proco 360 because the Horizon Organic brand is so prominent. Hey, my wife and I are regular customers. I mentioned that to you, Tyler. So I am really curious about aspects of the organics business and the industry. I'm also really eager to talk about branding and the cute happy cows that drive the brand. So Tyler, welcome to Proco 360.
Hey, thanks so much, Dave. Excited to be here and happy to talk about Horizon.
Good. So I gave a really short overview. Give
sure.
us a quick kind of catch-up overview of what's going on at Horizon Organic Dairy.
A lot's going on, actually. The business has been around since 1991, so 30 plus years in the organic dairy space. As you can appreciate, a lot has evolved in those three decades. You know, we started off in humble beginnings here in Colorado with a simple yogurt product, and later that evolved into milk products and then a suite of dairy products. And then over time, we started to focus on value-added nutrition within the organic space. Think about organic milk with DHA, or we recently in the last couple of years launched something called Horizon Organic Growing Years, which we developed with pediatricians to have things like prebiotics and probiotics and DHA and choline and sort of a customized bundle of nutrients to help young kids grow and develop. And while it's been a fantastic ride over those 30 plus years, a lot has changed and a lot stayed the same.
In 1991, I mean, you started Horizon Organic, well, you didn't, but it
I
was
did
started
not.
In 1991.
Sure.
I mean, you look back at Horizon Organic Dairy, you look back at organic milk, and there was just like, it seemed like you were 20 years too early, or the company was 20, because now it's like raging, right?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the growth rate has definitely accelerated and been very healthy over the last couple of decades. But you have to realize, like, it required a bit of that pioneering movement in the early 90s to start to develop the consumer and engage the customer and get people's mindset around, like, what is organic and why does it exist? And recognize that
yeah.
it wasn't until 10 years later that they even had the USDA standards, which mm-hmm. we helped to create and implement for the system.
So like, okay, so 1991, what percentage of the market would you say was organic?
I mean, it would be measured in 0.1% of dairy or
yeah,
something. I mean, it was tiny.
And what is it now?
So today, overall, roughly 5% of dairy in the U.S. is organic.
Five, yeah.
But you have things like organic milk is a more developed category. So maybe 10% of sales of milk
yeah.
are organic.
Hmm.
But then you have categories like cheese, which is a $40 billion category, and well less than 1% of consumer purchases are organic.
So was 1991, at a practical level, was that too early to start in this business? I mean, really? Could it have waited 10 years, 20 years even?
You could make that argument, but I think people started to see the reason why organic should come to be, right? And if you think about the things that constitute organic around not using pesticides or antibiotics or growth hormones or genetic modification, I think, you know, around that time, there were a number of people who felt concerned
yeah.
and wanted to sort of try to shape the food system and make different alternatives available to consumers who are concerned along some of those dimensions.
So back in 1991, it seemed like it was such a tiny niche.
For sure.
And could the company make money even back then in such a tiny, tiny niche? Or was this like an investment in the future? And
I think very much of that. Like,
really?
And I don't think that the founders set out to create a large organic enterprise. Like, I think they did very well and the business did well and it went public and ultimately Dean Foods purchased it. And then we went through a number of chapters growing the business from less than $100 million to $250 million to $500 million mm-hmm. to roughly $1 billion today. So you've
wow.
seen a nice evolution over time. But I think they were passionate about their belief in organic and their
mm-hmm.
belief in a better way of creating food and affecting the food system and pulling, you know, perhaps damaging pesticides out of our crops and
out of our
food
yeah,
system
yeah, yeah.
And sort of protecting organic in that way. And, you know, at that point in time, too, there was a ton of growth hormone use in dairy. You may remember in those days, it was very common for farmers to use growth hormones
yeah.
to help the cow to produce more milk, to allow the farmer to make more money. a lot of concerns from parents, like what are the effects of those added hormones and how do they affect my kids through adolescence and beyond? And
yeah, well, you say a lot of concern from parents, but really it was a lot of concern from just a few parents, wasn't it, back then?
Could have been. But as you know, Dave, there's probably a vocal minority that helps to shape the mindset and perspective of the broader majority, right?
And there are still people in what would be considered conventional dairy products or conventional food products or whatever that say this whole thing is overblown, that there's not, you know, that it's kind of nonsense, that we're turning into a high expensive, less accessible product. How do you talk to people like that?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt organic food systems are in the United States on average more expensive, right? But I think trying to do things in the right way isn't necessarily always the cheapest. But if you take the long run perspective versus the short run, I think it's the better way, right?
Well, look, if you factor in, and this I get on my soapbox sometimes, but if you get into the externalities of health, right? I mean, eating healthier food has got to save our nation.
Undoubtedly.
Right.
Yeah. When you think about prevention versus correction, right?
Or,
you know, it's not like we could raise our hand and say, hey, we believe that the United States has the healthiest, you know, population in the world, right? I mean, there's little data that would support that
right.
now.
Well, and I'm going to interrupt you because now I'm going to turn it back on you a little bit because so many people think that dairy is an unnecessary part of a human, you know, a human diet, right? That this has been, goes back to whatever the 60s when lobbyists forced the FDA to create the food pyramid and dairy was, I don't know where you are on that, but And then it was fabricated based on lobbyists. So what's the truth there?
You know, I mean, I certainly come at it from a biased view, so I'll say that, but I believe dairy offers terrific nutrition, right? When you think about things like calcium and vitamin D and A and protein, I think people have come back to dairy in a really big way, Dave, in the last couple of years, recognizing they may have moved to some alternatives that they perceived as potentially being healthier, but in reality, generally empty calories or empty nutrition versus, you know, consuming a glass of milk that has 8 grams of protein and a lot of calcium and vitamin A and D and helps your bone density, et cetera. Like, I think, you know, I'm a big fan of dairy. Obviously, I wouldn't be in this business
you know,
if I weren't. But
I am too. I am too. Try to cut back on the butter. But yes. So what are the market trends now around market demand around organic, for example, like over the last few years? What's that?
Yeah, you've seen a
growth curve.
I would say a 3-5% growth rate on organic dairy broadly over the last handful of years. So slightly faster than conventional dairy, ahead of inflation. I think if you look at how populations continue to evolve and change in the United States, the younger consumers generally are more predisposed to want things like organic.
Yeah.
Where does my food come from? What's in it? How are the animals underlying the food treated? You know, one of the nice things about organic that I don't know if a lot of people realize, but the cows have access to pasture and they're out on pasture and they're grazing and it's not just confined in a barn.
Yeah.
And you've seen similar trends in chicken eggs, right, over the last decade plus where people care increasingly how are those chickens, you know, treated and are they free, you know, are they
– Really? What is free, right? Yeah, I know. So – but hence the picture we're going to come back and talk about the cartoon of the happy cow, right?
Okay.
But so I want to come back to that. But – before I do that, I want to talk a little bit about the business itself of running. Like, what are the challenges of running an organic dairy that might be different from a conventional dairy?
Yeah. I think one of the biggest challenges is just aligning supply and demand. So when you think about the creation of organic milk supply, a lot of times you're converting ground that was previously not organic, and that's a multi-year process. So it takes 3 years to convert a parcel of ground that had been farmed conventionally back to organic. And then it takes, you know, upwards of a year or two potentially to secure cows and start the dairy or convert the dairy.
They start as calves? Do they have to start as calves in your food chain?
So a first-time farm can transition into organic, but that means you've fed the cows exclusively organic dairy and they haven't been treated with antibiotics, et cetera, for more than a year. Once that dairy farm is inorganic, all of the cows have to come from within the system. So they can no longer bring any cows from outside from conventional. So it makes the sort of barrier to entry, that barrier to growth much steeper or more challenging. So we need to be able to predict with reasonable accuracy a couple years from now, what's the demand of organic milk and dairy? And therefore, how much volume are we working with our farmer partners to cultivate? To me, that's one of the biggest complexities versus in the conventional market. You can go out into a very fluid market, apologize for the pun, and you can sort of contract or procure additional milk on a week's, months, couple months notice, right? And it's not as big of a deal.
Are there things that are super hard about your business? Like, I'm always curious, like, what would most of us not even think about as the brutal part, the hardest part of running a company like yours?
Yeah, so I think to be an organic farmer is very difficult. And obviously, I would say Horizon Organic, we're not the farmer. We partner with hundreds of farmers across the country.
You contract to purchase their milk?
Yeah. Yeah. Most all of our milk we buy directly from farmers with whom we have a direct relationship. Hey, Farmer Dave, we'd like to get in business with you. We'd like to buy milk from your farm for the next few years. But they're incredibly inspiring. When you watch the farmers, I mean, Dave, it's a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week, 360.
Every day.
Yeah, like those cows need to be milked twice or three times a day every single day.
But they're organic. They're organic milkers, right? They've got like some kind of velvet-lined little whatever suckers.
They don't have velvet-lined teats. In fact, a lot of the same technology you could use in terms of a rotary parlor or other kinds of milking parlors exist in organic. But obviously, you're exclusively milking organic cows, right? There's not an ability to milk conventional cows for 2 hours and then bring in organic. You sort of need to separate the supplies and protect to make sure that they're completely segregated, et cetera.
So is the reason organic is more expensive is that everything is more expensive? I mean, if you're letting cattle roam, then you have to have more land. If you're feeding them non-treated, everything, right?
You got it.
So what is the difference, the pricing differential? Is it what, typically?
On the farm side, it's usually more than 2x or roughly 2x. So if you look at some of the government prices for conventional milk or different classes in dairy, you know, let's say they can range from $15 to $20 on average for the different classes of pay prices. You know, with an organic, it's not uncommon to be 2x that.
Wow. So the pricing in the grocery store is roughly 2x.
Yeah, at least.
At least?
At least.
So, all right, I got to ask you this then. If it's more than twice as expensive, is conventional milk that harmful that that organic is worth 2.5 times as much?
Absolutely, Dave. No, I mean, harmful is a word I'd be careful on, but I do think when you're supporting the organic food movement and you're providing your family with organic dairy, I do think it's something that's tangibly different and drives a real benefit.
Yeah. I want to talk about the brand because I am fascinated. Well, first of all, it's just cute, right?
It's this a great
cartoon
cow.
It's a great brand. And has it changed?
The brand logo lockup has been very, very similar for 30 years. I mean, 20 plus years.
Yeah.
I mean, every time marketing, you know, generally as a marketer, you want
to fuss with something.
Yeah, you want to tinker with it. You want to like move things around. But it's been relatively constant for a long time. And Happy the Cow, sort of that cartoon character, her name is Happy. I mean, she's been a very iconic part of the brand for as long as I can remember, and I've been around for 20 plus years.
She's probably your best producing cow. How many have you had that have lasted that long?
No. Yeah, not many. Yeah. But when you're on some dairies and you talk to farmers, you know, I love asking them trivia questions like that. Like, how old is your oldest cow and how many lactation cycles? And
well, I've never heard that before.
Every once in a while, they'll be like, hey, you know, this is Bessie and she's been with us for 15 years and 12 lactation cycles or 11. I mean, there's some cows that are amazingly prolific and you have to sort of tip your cap to them.
I'm going to take a quick break to thank sponsors. When we come back, I want to know what lactation cycles mean exactly.
Okay. All right.
But first, you're listening to Proco 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast the last 4 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This is the podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest today is Tyler Holm, CEO of Horizon Organic Dairy. I want to thank our great sponsors, Kinsley Meetings, and they have been our longest running sponsor of Proco 360. They're growing based on great reputations for producing meetings and conventions that serve their customers' goals and objectives. Also, Via Technologies, thanks for hosting ProCo 360, for all the great help your team gives me around managing the website, Colorado Biz Magazine, and we have a partnership where we're building our brands together and our audiences together. And finally, Denver Ventures. I almost said Denver Angels. They changed their name recently to Denver Ventures, and they are partnering with us to feature great Colorado companies. Go to proco360.com and check out these great partners. All right. Before I get into, I got to get back into the branding questions, but yep. Lactation cycles, that's different from years. That's different from what is it?
So similar to humans, when a cow becomes pregnant.
Oh boy, are we going into biology? All right.
Dave, put your gloves on here. Put your boots on. So you impregnate a cow. She's pregnant for 9 months, similar to a human. She delivers a calf, and that sort of kicks off her lactation cycle. So at that point in time, she starts producing milk, and a typical lactation cycle is probably around 1 year. So that you're measuring, you know, the cow providing or producing milk, and over time her production sort of tapers off, and you'll re-impregnate her, and she'll sort of start again. And
oh, so she's got to have a calf every. Whatever, year and a half, 2 years, every 2 years in order to keep this thing going?
You got it.
All right. My wife, Cheryl, excuse me, she grew up on a farm. She's going to be laughing when I say, like, I didn't get how this works. Listeners, if you knew how this really worked, you can let me know. All right. So back to branding. So, you know, it seems that a happy cow and kind of organic kind of go together. It's as if,
yeah.
You know, there's this perception that, I don't know, maybe it makes happier milk. I mean, do you do any research around this? The idea that a cartoon will drive sales?
I don't know that we do any research around a cartoon driving sales, but I do think Happy the Cow, when you see her, she makes you happy. And when you feel happy, you want to engage with that brand. But I also think the nature of organic, where cows do have access to pasture and they get to wander around and they get to graze and they get to socialize and they spend time in a very different environment than perhaps a cow in a conventional dairy, I think that would make you happy. And we were in California last week working with some of our farmers, and you've got hundreds of cows out on these beautiful green pastures, and they're talking about the cows are talking about lactation cycles and how good the grass tastes and how much fun they're having in the sunshine before it gets too hot in Central California.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, and by the way, I mentioned my wife. She's huge into organics, and I asked her what she wanted me to ask you.
Okay.
And she's like, well,
insider questions.
Yeah. She's like, well, how do we know? Like, are they really organic? And then she goes, well, they must be.
For sure.
So, but I mean, no, her perception was that there was a trust around your brand that she thought that would be a sort of an unnecessary question to ask you at Horizon Organic Dairy. Yeah. But in the market—
I think it's a good question, though.
Yeah.
And I would say we at Horizon put a lot of time and energy into making sure that our system end-to-end has the integrity that we want it to have, right? And the good news is organic has a lot of audits and a lot of validation from third parties going in and looking at what are the systems on these farms? How are the animals treated? Organic farmers have to take very copious records and notes of everything
really?
That they do. Yes.
Huh.
How much of the feed matter is coming from pasture? What they're doing to feed the cows? You know, if they're moving cows around, where they're going? I mean, it's probably one of the less favorite parts for organic farmers is all of the record keeping required to keep up with their audits. And and not only do they have sort of regimented annual audits, but you can get unannounced audits that come and people want to look
at. They do.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I do think that, and there's been here in the last few years even something called strengthening organic standards, where they've even put more emphasis on making sure that everyone in the organic dairy food system is adhering to the rules, abiding by them. But I think one of the things we've done well over the last 30 plus years, Dave, is built trust with our consumer and worked hard to constantly provide your wife and others with a high quality, great product. And that's something we take incredibly seriously.
Yeah. How do they know? I mean, seriously.
How does who know?
Well, how does a customer know that your product is of a different grade than another organic dairy's product? I mean, there's really no way. They can't test. They can't know. And so to me, it's about, you know, the challenge of building a brand that customers trust, even though they don't really know.
Yeah. I mean, I think you interact with that brand and you can certainly do research about the brands and products. And I think one of the things that we have going for us is we've been around for a really long time and we've consistently delighted our consumers and provided them with great products that are high quality, that are organic, that are leading in the market. And I think over time, that's earned us their loyalty and their respect and their appreciation.
Yeah. To what extent are you planning to sort of expand your product line? I mean, it mostly is milk and butter. And
milk is the biggest part of our product line today, but I think we get excited. I mean, as you see trends in yogurt and cottage cheese and other parts of dairy continuing to proliferate, I mean, I think those are exciting areas where we as Horizon Organic, the company, and having the Horizon Organic brand, and we also have an organic yogurt brand called Wallaby. I mean, I think we believe there are nice expansion opportunities within organic dairy. And over time, organic dairy can become a larger and larger part of the broader dairy category.
I'm not sure about cottage cheese.
Really?
I like it, but just doesn't seem like it's going to be a growth market. I don't know.
It's growing very quickly.
Come on, really?
Yeah,
cottage
probably cheese? 20%+. Yeah.
Wow.
So take a step back. You've got all You've got all of this craze around high quality protein, low sugar. You've got this proliferation of things like GLP-1s and semaglutides, and people are much more focused on how do I get dense nutrition, fewer calories, high quality protein. Mm. And I think honestly, that's driven a lot of the rage back into dairy, where dairy had sort of stagnated a bit for many years, and you've seen it really start to accelerate in growth in the last few years. People look at dairy and they're like, wow, it has a lot of high quality nutrition and protein, calcium, et cetera, in it. And the caloric intake's not crazy.
Oh, that's cool. All right.
Yeah.
Now, I'm curious about this. When you imagine a customer, and you probably do more than imagine, you figure it out, but when a customer's shopping for a dairy product, do you feel like you're competing against other organic products, or do you feel like you're competing against conventional, trying to convince customers do customers find their way to organic because they want to, or is there something about the way you reach them that helps them make that change?
I think it's both. At times, people go through changes in life that sort of prompt a reevaluation. So as an example, when you have kids for the first time and you're going in that transition from maybe you've been doing, you know, breastfeeding or infant formula, and now you're transitioning to dairy milk, that's sort of a moment of inflection for a lot of families to say, what's the right choice? What are the options? And I think that's where we as Horizon focus on recruiting a lot of our new households, is when they're bringing new kids, you know, into dairy products for the first time. Mm. But I think we actively try to market to build our brand. But I would say I look at the $17+ billion of conventional milk sales as a much bigger opportunity to go after and bring people into organic and in our Horizon than the $2 or $2.5 billion of sales that live in organic today.
Because you're one of the primary brands in organic milk.
We're the largest organic milk brand.
All right. So in doing that, in being that, do you feel like you need to sort of lead the industry in sort of that educational transformation?
Yes.
Do you spend money on that? Do you spend money on educating consumers about why organic milk?
We do. And I think, frankly, Dave, we need to spend more. And I think it's, how do we do both jobs of convincing consumers on the importance of organic and why that's a better choice? And within that, that Horizon Organic is the right brand for them, right? Because you get nervous as the category leader. We go out and spend all this money to build the category, and there's invariably a cheaper option, a store brand, an alternative brand. So it's like, we have two big jobs. How do we bring you into organic? Check. And how do we say, hey, Horizon Organic is the right brand for me within organic, because it has added nutrition or benefits, or, you know, we're confident they do a better job in their, you know, their manufacturing and their procurement of milk and all of these things that give us confidence we choose them.
Yeah. And I'm going to pun back at you, but do you white label your product?
No. So we really focus on the Horizon Organic brand. Historically, we've done a little bit of store brand stuff for certain customers, but our business model is really focused on our brand, on the Horizon Organic brand and the Wallaby brand. And that's 95%+ of what we do. And that's our big focus.
And I would think that if you're the industry leader and you're providing content, educational ideas for helping people convert to organic, that they'd see your brand. They know who you are. And
I mean, interesting. We've done research in the last couple of years. And when you think about milk brands, broadly speaking, not just organic, Horizon's actually a top 3 or 4 brand in terms of brand recognition. Huh. So, you know, it's got phenomenal brand recognition. It's been around a long time. It's got a very distinctive red carton and Happy the Cow. And, you know, we've been blessed over the years to generally have mini facings at the grocery store. And so you see maybe 10 or 12, you know, various cartons of our product, and that's helped us really build the brand.
Oh, and that's the facing. How many cartons are before you? Yeah.
You got it.
Well, that's quite interesting as you think about conventional milk. And yeah, I know there are brands and I could probably name a few, but basically it's milk.
Yeah. And in that conventional side, 70%+ of the volume is store brand. It's sort of private label, white label.
Generic.
You got it. Conversely, in organic, it's sort of the inverse where 60%+ of the dollar sales are in the branded products versus the private label or store brands.
Yeah. You got it. I want to switch gears and I want to talk about the idea of being a B Corp.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not easy to do. And it's defined as a global movement of people using business as a force for good.
Yep.
You guys are doing it. It's not easy and it's expensive. Talk about that.
Yeah. I think it's a question, Dave, of what are you committed to? And when we were setting up our company, yes, generating an economic profit is important to us. And yes, having durable financial results are important. And yes, treating our employees well is super important. But also as a large organic dairy business, we felt like we had an accountability to the environment and society and sort of broader context than just a P&L and a bottom line.
Yeah, but now you're owned by private equity.
We are.
But, so how can that – you can't have a private equity owned B Corp.
We do. We do.
How does that work? Seriously.
I think when Platinum Equity, which is the private equity group that owns our business, when they bought the business, they recognized they were buying an organic dairy business that's focused on not only making great products, but doing it in the right way, right? And they've been phenomenal partners. They've been great owners. We identified them relatively early in the process of figuring out where we were going to go with Horizon Organic, and they've been terrific. And they supported our B Corp journey And as you can appreciate, they have their own commitments to sustainability and to doing things in a better way. And I think we learn from each other and we both continue to help our respective organizations grow and progress.
Yeah, but one of the premises of private equity firms basically is to make as much money as you can.
Sure.
One of the premises of a B Corp is to not be forced to maximize profit, and that you profit is counted by a mixture of stakeholders and not by bottom line dollar profit. So you're shaking your head, maybe not, but I mean, those don't seem to jive.
Yeah. I could see where you sense there's maybe a little bit of conflict there, but I think they go together more than you'd think in terms of if we ran Horizon Organic just to maximize short-term profit, we would do a lot of things that over time, Dave, could erode the trust and belief in our business. Right. And we intend that not only has Horizon been here for the last 30 years, but it's here for the next 30 years.
Yeah.
So the way that we run the company, the way we interact with our farmers, the way we treat our employees, the way we contract with our suppliers and our manufacturing partners, et cetera, all of those things matter a lot, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How sustainable and how recyclable is our packaging and how are we working hard to operate the business in a more circular fashion, et cetera. I mean, if Platinum or we just took a very myopic, short-sighted view, yes, you could perhaps maximize profit this year, next year, but at what expense longer term?
Of course, yeah. So. Now, things sometimes do go wrong. And, you know, you did have a recall earlier this year of about 20,000 cases of milk, which sounds like a lot, but I don't really think it is it?
It's not a lot for the scale of our business, but certainly we would like every unit of product we sell to be awesome all the time.
And basically the deal was that it might not be sustained through its product expiration date.
Premature spoilage you got it.
So you did that. What's the story behind that? And like, you know, what happened when you found out? Somebody call you at 2 a.m. and say, uh-oh, or how does that go?
Yeah, essentially. I don't know that it was 2:00 a.m, but hey, Tyler, we've got some product that's in the market that we think may spoil faster than it should. So then we work with the FDA to make them aware, hey, here's the situation. We do a lot of tests we retain samples of all the products that we make. So we can test them like, hey, what's the cause of it? Good news, there's not a health issue here. But if you're a consumer and you pay money for a high quality organic product and it goes bad early, you're not thrilled about that. Yeah. So then we work with our retail partners to try to bring back as much of that product off the shelves in the stores and make sure that you and your wife buy great product every time you're there. So it's not ideal. And there's some learning and some painful steps there, but manufacturing food isn't as simple and easy as perhaps sometimes we want it to be. And that's why we go through great lengths to ensure that Horizon is the highest quality it can be as frequently as it can be, and really try to protect the experience for our consumers.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't sound like it was a terrible thing. It sounds like it was cost some money and was a lot of headache. But, you know, I think about these little startup companies that start in someone's kitchen or whatever. They don't have to adhere to any of that food safety stuff.
You have to be careful.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a tough story. I'm sure it was tough to go through.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was good learning for our team. And again, one of the things we value most is the trust we have with our consumers. So anytime you do anything that, you know, can put that at risk, it certainly like keeps
That's
you up.
That's got to be painful. Like, you know, yes, everybody, like, yes, we're recalling, but as soon as they hear that word recall, it's like, you know, a Tylenol scare from the 80s. Like, but it really wasn't dangerous.
Yeah, it's not
and yet,
that magnitude.
What's the message to consumers? It's like, yes, we need the product back and it won't hurt you anyway. Like, what a tough message.
Yeah, you're trying to balance it. And obviously, there is nuance in the message, and you're playing telephone and you're giving information to customers and they're trying to relay that. And you're trying to get consumers to reach out to your 1-800 number to get more information or go to your website to learn more. And
it's sort of
like this very small run of product with this code on it, with this timestamp on it. I mean, there's some complexity there, but, knock on wood, we're through that and moving forward with optimism and confidence. We've addressed the issues.
Well, all right, shifting gears again, you've been with the business for a long time, 18 years at least. You were rising through management. You know, you've been through all these business transitions, different ownership, everything. Like, why? Like, how did you manage to adapt through all this stuff over all this time?
Yeah. I mean, I would say had you talked to me 18 or 20 or 22 years ago and said, hey, Tyler, you'll still be here 20 years from now, that would have surprised me. But, you know, I love this business and I love the team of people we have, and they're passionate and they're committed and they're hardworking and they want to make a positive impact. And, you know, I've had a couple of, I'll say, inflection points along the way where I thought about walking away and going and doing something else. But in my heart, I always felt like this is where I should be and this is where I want to be. And I feel great privilege to lead the team and to work alongside so many awesome people. And we have a terrific brand and we've got a really important mission to help improve, you know, the food that we eat in this country. And we've got hundreds of awesome farmer partners who work 24 hours a day to help provide that food. And I feel incredibly blessed.
Well, you know, over 20 years or roughly 20 years, roughly.
Yeah.
You started at a low level and you made your way up to CEO. And like, did you get special training? Did you just like, were you just like the last guy standing? How did that evolution take place?
You know, I would say, Dave, I was blessed with a lot of terrific bosses/mentors along the way who taught me a lot. Mm. And I knew early in my career I wanted to be a CEO. Like that was—
Really?
Yeah. That
Why?
Was clear. I love the opportunity to lead people and create change. And I think CEOs are generally in a position where they can enact a lot of positive impact and change and lead people.
Wasn't that hard though? Early on when you knew you wanted to be CEO, you must have sat there and looking up two or three levels saying, I could do better. I could do better. Or no?
Yeah, I don't know that. There were certainly moments in my career where you're like, hey, I'm not sure he or she made the right choice and I may have managed it differently. And you learn from both sides, right? You learn from great leaders who do things in a way that you really respect and you want to emulate. And then every once in a while you see a behavior like, yeah, that's probably not one I want to put in my arsenal and have for the future. But I do feel very blessed by a lot of leaders over the last 20 years who, you know, were willing to invest in me and help to teach and educate and train and develop and sort of push me and get me outside of my comfort zone. I remember, you know, a handful of years ago, I was working in our U.S. business as part of White Wave Foods, and they said, hey, Tyler, we're thinking about expanding into Asia, and we'd potentially like to ship you to Asia to have you help us lead that effort. And you can appreciate, Dave, like that was never part of my career plan or journey, but it turned out to be a phenomenal experience. And I moved my family to Hong Kong for a few years and learned a tremendous amount and had exposure to the Asian markets and mainland China and a lot of the evolution around dairy and plant-based in those markets. And it was very intriguing, but just along the way, had a lot of great opportunities to learn and grow and develop. And and because I knew what I wanted to do long-term, I could sort of look through the lens of what are the skills, what are the attributes, what are the experiences I likely will need between here and there so that when the time comes, I'll be prepared. So and I don't know that you're ever fully prepared to become a CEO, but at least give you a fighting chance.
Yeah. So what was the one thing that you feel like you had to really develop or get better at in order to be successful in your current role?
Yeah, I think one of the things was, around demand creation. You know, I came from a consulting background. You know, I had sort of grown up through the lens of how do you look at businesses and figure out how to optimize them, how to make them better.
Yeah, but you were too young to actually be able to consult. Anyway.
That's a different story for a different podcast.
Yes. But okay, so you started as a consultant. Yes.
Yeah, but I had a boss named Blaine, whom I really loved and respected. And at one point he said, hey, Tyler, I'm going to help you learn how to market brands and how to build brands. And so he put me in roles leading marketing on the bigger, you know, brands that we had in that time at that time within White Wave Foods. And he sort of trained and mentored and gave me other bosses who are very adept and skilled in those areas and sort of helped to accelerate my ability to build brands and market and understand customers and consumer behavior. And, you know, if you want to grow a business from $250 million to $500 to $750 to $1 billion, what are the key steps? You know, what does that look like? And how do you do that successfully?
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Now, how did White Wave did start in Colorado, but I was going to ask about Horizon Organic. That started in Colorado. Colorado is not known as a dairy state. So how did this happen?
Yeah, I think you just had the right mix of a couple of highly passionate organic food pioneers here in the Boulder area who said, hey, we want to build something. And as you probably know, Boulder, Denver, Colorado has been a great incubator of up-and-coming better-for-you food brands, organic, natural, for many decades. So I think you had the right infrastructure and a lot of the right passionate minds and hardworking intellectual folks coming together to try to build something that they could sustain. So I think that's probably why, you know, Colorado.
That makes sense. I hadn't heard that term before, better for you food category.
Yeah.
Is that a thing now?
I think that's a thing. I mean—
But I mean, is that a quote, a phrase in quotes that I just didn't hear before?
Yeah, I think that's been around for a decade or two. Escaped Dave's
vernacular,
sort of better for you. I mean, and that gives you permission to say, hey, I'll make it up. There's a coffee creamer category. What's a better for you option that's perhaps less sugar, you know, more, healthier fats? Mm-hmm. Like, what can you do to make it better?
Better for you. That's cool.
A better for you alternative.
All right, last question.
Yeah.
And that is to do with, like, if you're going to give – said you got a lot of mentorship and so forth as you were coming up through the ranks. If you were going to give a piece of advice to someone thinking about getting into the maybe organic or even better for you category, but getting into that kind of products business, what's the one piece of advice that you'd start with?
I mean, if you want to get into a food category, I think you want to understand consumer behavior and you want to make sure you're entering the market with a product for which there's really a need. That you can go and build something, right? I think there are a lot of passionate people who have a dream, who have an ambition, but they don't really understand what consumers are looking for. Mm. And so they launch the wrong product or they communicate about it in the wrong way, or they don't focus on the right attribute. I think being a student of consumer behavior and what people are looking for is a great first step. And then I think on the heels of that, a lot of tenacity, a lot of grit, a lot of diligence, and you're going to need to pivot, you know? Your plan A is probably going to fail, but if you can sort of work to plan B, plan C, plan D as you go, you got a real shot of success.
Cool. Let's wrap with that. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Tyler Holm, CEO of Horizon Organic Dairy. Tyler, good to have you on ProCo 360. Boy, you answered all my questions about organic milk. Yes. So good to have you on ProCo 360. Hey, I want to give a quick shout out to Sarah Loveday at the Schroeder House Agency. She's the one who connected us. She's in the other room watching. And listeners, glad you're here on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast. And if you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in your app. Thanks again to our show sponsors, Via Technologies, Kinsley Meetings, Denver Ventures, and Colorado Biz Magazine. That's the show. Live, work, love Colorado.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Dave. Great to be here.
Always fun to have you. Yeah. I learned everything I needed about organic milk.
There you go. You're ready to start a farm.
Oh, no. I still need to learn about lactation.
There you go.